Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 22th of March, Anno Domini 2025, and you would be disappointed if I didn't say it that way. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Here comes the news. I apologize. Clearly, things have started growing already. And
in your throat?
In my
sinuses.
And they're all heading for me. All the allergies are heading for me. All right. Microsoft has issued its most chilling warning yet for 800 million Windows users who have yet to upgrade to Windows 11. If there was any doubt as to its resolve to hold a firm line on ending Windows 10 support, that's gone. All those PCs will be wide open to data breaches, identity theft, and other serious consequences, Microsoft warns. And I quote, not fun. This week, many Windows 10 users have already received an email telling them to check the upgrade eligibility of their PCs or look into buying a new machine. When your OS is no longer getting all those important security updates, it can be a bit like leaving your front door wide open, it says, spelling out just what could happen if you don't. Microsoft warns that those 800 million users will risk increased vulnerability to malware as well as risk of cyber attacks. Microsoft has confirmed a 12-month extended support option will be available, but Microsoft doesn't want that to be a large-scale fallback. Security updates, Microsoft says, are like locks on your doors. They help keep the bad guys out. And coming just a few days after its monthly update warnings of yet more zero-day vulnerabilities under attack, it stresses that these updates patch up vulnerabilities that could be exploited by malware or hackers. Without them, your unsupported OS is an easy target, and your personal info could be at risk. Having hundreds of millions of PCs all falling off of support on October 14th of this year is certain to be exploited. Cyber criminals are a crafty bunch, and they're always on the lookout for outdated systems to exploit. An unsupported OS is like an open invitation for these attackers. Once they're in, they can steal sensitive information, install malware, or use your system for their own nefarious purposes. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Microsoft issues dire warnings about Windows 10 end of support. And your choices are, I'm already on Windows 11. I plan on upgrading soon. I'm looking at new PCs that support it. Going commando, baby. So, Linux, you say, and wait, you still use Windows? So far, we've got 27 votes in the poll, and so Linux, you say, and wait, you still use Windows are tied for first place. Unfortunately, four of you have said going commando, baby. Anyway, you can vote in the poll at soundbites.org, and you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. The thing is, those of you who are going commando, there will come a time, and it will not be long from now, when no one will be able to support you, including us. The reality is that, you know, right now we can say, oh, download this, download that, try this. Those are all going to go away.
And which is stupid because all it takes is disk space, which is virtually free these
days.
Well,
it takes disk space, but it also takes people to update it and keep it updated, right? So if I write a utility that runs on Windows 10 and it runs slightly differently on Windows 11,
mm-hmm.
I'm eventually going to abandon the 10 version.
Yeah.
So we will at some point be saying, I'm sorry, we cannot help you. You're still on Windows 10. And that's not going to be 5 years from now. That's going to be sooner than that.
Well, and as of the November Microsoft update, that's going to fix 100 bugs, like every month. None of those bugs will be fixed in Windows 10.
That's right.
And so we always joke about morbid jokes. Patch Tuesday is followed quickly by Exploit Thursday, because all the bad guys reverse engineer the bugs on Wednesday and release a attack by Thursday for the bug that didn't get fixed in your Windows 10 and all the people that don't upgrade Windows 11 either.
Right. And now all they have to do is look at the list of things that were fixed in 11,
mm-hmm.
and that gives them the list of things they can go after in 10.
Yep.
The reality is that as much as you love Windows 10 and as much as you hate change and as much as you're a genuine curmudgeon who wants everybody to get off his lawn or her lawn, the reality is that Windows 10 is going away. And not just Windows 10, but all of the available support for it as well. And not only that, it now becomes the number one target of cyber criminals. And I know you're sitting there saying, well, I don't have anything they can steal. Well, you have a credit card. You have a bank account. You have a wide open machine that they can put any software they want on it and do anything they want with it.
And you have a credit history. You might say, well, I've got terrible credit. They can't get any money from me. There are banks that will give you a $500 credit card,
mm-hmm.
or you know whatnot, and I get pre-approved credit cards all the time. I got a $50,000 offer the other day. I'm not going to even bother filling that out because I know it's fake.
Right.
They fill out credit in your name, and that's $500 they didn't have before.
Right.
Or they get into your machine and you know they find $5 in your account. That's $5 they didn't have before.
Right. And like I said, you have a wide open machine. They can put porn on it and serve it from your machine.
Mm-hmm. You're guilty.
And then if you get caught, prove it wasn't you.
Yep.
a new guy ages ago, he created a temporary admin account on his computer to test something out. Username was admin and the password was admin, just because it was temporary. And then within a couple of days, his hard drive was full. Because someone found that account on the internet and started filling it up with junk.
Yep. And it's all automated. So it's not mm-hmm. like, oh, they're going to miss me. They hit every address on the internet and look for stuff.
Yeah,
it's all automated, so you will get hit. You may get hit.
Yep.
You will get hit.
It used to be easy. Well, it still is easy to scan every one of the 16 million IPv4 addresses. It's harder to scan IPv6, but still doable.
Right.
Because mm-hmm. there's 16 billion, isn't it? Something like that.
Something like that.
But billion.
Right, so, right, right.
A little harder.
Yeah.
But they also have multiple machines.
Yeah.
So they give this block to this person, this block to this person. They're not doing 1 to 16 billion. They're doing 1 to 1,000. Now somebody gets 1,000 and 1 to 2,000. So they can do it faster. Be aware. There will come a time when you call us and we will say what operating system you're running, and you'll say Windows 10, and we'll tell you we can't help you.
Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Just be aware that that's coming, and it's not our fault, but it's
nothing we can do about it. Yeah, it's beyond our control.
Yeah, that's a bug that was fixed in this update that you didn't install, and now it's been removed from the internet, and you can't install it.
Right, exactly right. I'm sorry. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Wayne from Irondequoit, New York. Hiya, Wayne. What operating system are you running?
Mint.
Mint. All right.
Mint. Yeah. Okay. I like to hear that.
Well,
cool.
I have an interesting question for you.
Yeah.
I went to go into my email account, and when I did, which is Yahoo, a pop-up came up, and it said that you need to upgrade Mozilla for me. Well, I looked at what the actual file name is, and I have a little problem with it. At the very, very end, you always have tar dot, like...
GZ, right.
GZ, BZ2, things of that nature. This one ends in XZ.
New compression format?
I don't know.
Is it XZIP?
Or they misspelled it?
No, there is an XZ. It is, in fact, it's often used in Linux.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
That's the first time I've ever come across it.
Well, okay, but, okay, so XZ is legit.
Okay.
Right? But if I were you, I would update my Mozilla. Why is it asking you to update Mozilla? Excuse me.
Yes.
Were you in Firefox or were you in Thunderbird?
I was in Firefox.
Okay, Firefox did just have an update this week.
Okay.
But I would see about updating it through your distribution rather.
Well, okay, that's fine. But I have further question on this. They want you to download 136.0.2. And my understanding is there've been 38 and 39. That seems like it's a long ways from home. They're 136.
I don't like it. Why the hell is Yahoo telling you to upgrade Mozilla, to upgrade Firefox?
Well, that's in order to get into the mail. And when I got it myself into the mail without installing this stuff, what happened was that every time you click on something to look at a mail, piece of mail, or you want to send an email, it immediately takes you back to this one piece that says you need to install this. And I do not feel good about this.
Maybe that was the version Yahoo Mail updated something and you need at least that version of Firefox, but now there have been new versions since that tech note came out. So just download the latest version.
Well, their latest version was that 136, and that seems like it's a long ways from where Mozilla's been recently.
Right.
So that sounds kind of funky, because usually they go one area after another. And this was a big jump. Like almost by a version of 100.
Yeah, I just went to Mozilla directly, and it downloaded 136.0.2.tar.xz.
Oh, okay. Now, should I be able to open that with my Mint, or do I need to do something different?
No, you should be able to open it with Mint. XZ is a known compression.
And, well, this says it's for Debian Ubuntu or Debian-based. Is Mint Debian-based?
Yes.
Okay. Or you can use the apt repository instead, it says.
Oh, so all I got to do is go to my download area, do sudo apt install and the new Firebird, and that should install me and we should be in good shape?
The new what?
The new Firebird.
Firebird. Oh, you're using Firebird.
No, I'm not.
Firefox or Thunderbird. Mixed them together.
Firefox, yeah. I got those mixed up. I'm sorry.
Yeah. You should be able to do that.
Firebird or Thunderfox.
Right. If you're a command line person, yes. Sudo apt install. What you should do is sudo apt update, sudo apt upgrade.
Yeah, you got to do both commands.
Sudo. Sudo apt update updates the database that you upgrade from.
Okay.
And that says, okay, there's a bunch of new stuff. And then sudo apt upgrade says, okay, all that new stuff, install it.
Okay.
And that's what you should do every time.
Okay, that sounds like a plan. Well, thank you very much, fellows, and have a good week.
You too. Have fun.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah. The ability to upgrade from the command line is really nice because you can do it on your schedule. Most Linuxes says these days, will, particularly if you're on an Ubuntu distribution, you can set it up to download in the background. So, like, it you know, it downloads at 2 in the morning. You don't care how long it takes.
Mm-hmm.
And then at 8 in the morning when you sit at your computer, or 9 or 11 or 2 p.m., you can say, okay, go. And it happens all from the graphical interface. But if you want to do it right now, if you want or just want to check on a Debian-based system, you would say sudo apt, apt, sudo apt update. That updates the database of programs. And then sudo apt upgrade, which upgrades all the, which goes into the database and says what's newer than what I have on my machine, and it will update all of those. And sometimes it's one program, sometimes it's none, sometimes it's 40. You know, usually this laptop that I'm using here, I only update once a week. So I get, you know, 39, mm-hmm. 104. Most of them are low-level programs that you would never use. They're just all stuff built into Linux itself. But they also need to be updated on a regular basis. So in particular for someone like Wayne, if he's never done an update...
There might be a lot of them waiting.
It could be a long process, Wayne. Could be a very long process. Remain calm. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Gene from Rochester, New York. What's up, Gene?
Well, what options do I have if I have Windows 10 and I can't have it anymore in October?
Your options are Windows 11.
Right. And is that more expensive and everything?
Well, it's not. Okay. It depends on your machine. It is currently a free download for Microsoft, but your machine needs to be able to run it. Not every computer. How old is your computer?
4 years old.
4 years old? That's a hard maybe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you know how much RAM you have?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
Okay, there's a program you can run, and I don't have it in my head right now.
Well, the Windows Windows update will tell you if you're compatible, but it doesn't differentiate between barely compatible and, yeah, it's okay to run.
True.
Okay, so it's touchy. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there is one option, to upgrade the machine you have if it will allow it.
Okay.
The second option is buy a new machine.
Okay.
That does run Windows 11. And the third option is run Linux.
Okay. Is it L-I? What is it?
Sorry?
L-I-N-U-X. It's a different operating system that runs on older computers that Microsoft doesn't support anymore. And it runs on all the newest computers, too.
Right.
Faster.
Linux.
It is an entirely different operating system. Many of the programs you use now do not run under Linux. There are equivalents. So, for example, you won't use Microsoft Office. You'll use LibreOffice. That sort of thing. And if you install Linux on your machine, it will wipe out everything that's there. So make sure you have two good backups.
Okay.
So that you can restore your data. If you want to go to Linux, that's an option that lets you keep your old hardware. The other thing is Linux and all the programs that run in under it are absolutely free.
One question for you. What do you use your computer for?
I'm a senior citizen, so just research mostly.
You know, another cheaper option and less scary is going and getting a Chromebook.
Or putting Chrome OS on her PC.
Yeah.
So if you do most of your stuff in a web browser, looking at websites, then Chrome OS is another operating system that's basically just the web browser, because almost everything we do is on the web.
Right.
But you can still do, if you need, you got Google Docs on there and that. So if you've got to write a letter or create a spreadsheet, that's still part of Chrome that you've got there. And if you're doing the internet, again, Chromebooks are, and I won't say they're totally, but are less likely to be infected. As we saw here, right here in the studio, when Nick was all of a sudden got a warning on his Chromebook that his Windows machine was infected. And it's pretty hard when you're running Chrome because Chrome more or less protects itself.
And Chrome is not Windows.
Yeah.
So we knew it was a scam, not a real thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that helps me a lot. I know it's 4 years old. It probably needs replacing anyway.
Right, right, right.
Now, so, did you buy it from a local company or did you buy it online?
No, I bought it from Staples.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
One of the things you can do is go to a local computer vendor, not one of the big box stores because they don't really know that much about their computers. They sell you a box.
True.
And they can tell you if your computer is capable and you could effectively upgrade to Windows 11.
Whether it's worth it.
Whether it's worth upgrading to Windows 11. And they could help you buy a new machine if you wanted to also.
Sure. Okay. That's great.
All right. Thanks good luck, Gene.
Both of you. Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Yeah, I gotta say, for the vast majority of people who spend almost all their time online, Chromebooks are an excellent alternative to dang near everything else. They're less expensive. They're much easier to use. They update easily and quickly and fine. And for the people who spend their day 99.9% in their web browser, including getting mail, you know, 99% of people do web browsing and email, and that's it. You don't need more than a Chromebook. Why are you paying for more than a Chromebook?
Inertia.
That's exactly right. Well, yep. I can't not have Windows 10. What do you run on Windows 10? Oh, the browser.
Yep.
And? No, just the browser. Okay. You're paying the Microsoft tax to A, buy a big machine that runs Windows. B, you're paying for Windows. I know you think it comes free with the computer. It does not.
It's built into the price.
It's built into the price. You pay for it. And it's just, it's a Chromebook is, take a look at the various Chromebooks that are available. And you know, Google makes them, Asus makes them, Lenovo makes them, a bunch of people make them. And I would suggest an 8-gig model. Many people, you know, you can buy a 4-gig model. And if all you ever do is browse the web, that's fine.
And that's the thing with Windows. 16-gig minimum for Windows because it's piggier. More piggy. And so it needs
the need of more resources.
Yeah, it needs bigger hardware, more hardware than a Chromebook.
Somebody this week at Microsoft just said 8-gig maybe is enough for Windows 11.
Windows will run not very well, but it will run.
It will run.
Yeah. The other thing though that would be to her advantage if Jean wanted to go ahead and get a Chromebook is she's still got this old machine. The only thing else that she'd have to do to it is literally download Linux and put it on and learn at her own pace. Well, she's still got the Chromebook to do her research and do her searching and watch other videos to learn more about Linux.
Sure, if she wants to go to Linux, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean,
but if she wants to stay on the Chromebook, you're right. She's still got the old machine and she can still
play around with it.
Play around with it, do whatever she wants to do. And she has the new Chromebook to learn on.
Yep.
Until she can transition.
And there are literally hundreds of YouTube videos with people out there trying all different flavors of Linux, and they'll walk you through on how to install it and how to do this and do that. You know, it's just unbelievable.
And that's another resources. Thing. YouTube has lots of videos about Chromebooks.
Yeah.
So you can start with some
there
of the how to use a Chromebook, the various things that are available. You'll find that is Chromebooks are an underrated product.
I even hear this guy called Nick Francesco wrote a book about how to use your Chromebook. A
couple of them in point of fact.
Yeah.
They're out of date now. I got to be honest with you. They're a little old, but they work. All right. We're going to take a short recess here while we slap Steve's wrist with a ruler. I don't know why, but we're going to do it. It's more fun that way. But we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Sound Bites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Fred from Rochester, New York on the line. What's up, Fred?
Hey, it's tax time.
It is that.
I need some help, and that can be a broad or narrow question, comment. I get my taxes done by an accountant. And she sends me an email with a password protected files, and they are PDFs, and I need to sign them and send them back to her. So I was looking on my Linux machine for an app that would do that. My research says XJournal it's XOURNAL.
Yep.
Google Docs, Libra, one of them, Writer, or I think is the one that they were saying was used. None of those will open a password protected PDF.
Yeah, what you have to do is open the PDF. Usually, you can double-click on it and type in the password and then save it to your desktop, then sign it.
Without a password.
Without a password.
Okay.
Then password protect it and send it back.
Okay. I can password protect it with one of those, with the X journal?
No.
Which Linux are you using?
Ubuntu,
okay. There's an Ask Ubuntu page here for encrypting PDF or password protecting PDFs. Use PDF
LibreOffice.
TK. LibreOffice, right. 2.
LibreOffice. You save it as a menu file export, I think it is, or just save as. And you select PDF, and one of the choices is, do you want to give it a password?
Okay, I can do that. One of the things that I did find in the hours and hours of doing something rather simple that I should be doing in seconds, on my phone, I can draw in a PDF that is on my Google Drive.
Annotate,
not annotate. That's different.
Right.
This is actually only on my phone. So when I tried to do it, I figured, well, it's hard to sign my name with just a fingertip on a 7-inch screen. I tried to do it on the desktop, and it doesn't give me an option to draw on it. It doesn't have the little. If you open a PDF from Google Drive on your phone, there's a little pen mark with a squiggly line next to it in the lower right-hand corner.
Yeah, because phones have touch screens and computers often don't.
Right.
Yeah, I was hoping I could do it with my mouse. But,
I think you can do it with LibreOffice Draw. I mean, that's kind of what Draw is about.
I couldn't open the file, so I have to go through that process first and then try it again.
Right.
That was the step that I didn't do. I thought I could just put in the password and open it, but it says error and whatever everything. I have an app on my phone for opening, editing PDFs, but they want to know everything they want to save all my everything. In the same way, if I open on my desktop Linux, it gives me an option of using a couple different pieces of software, but they also say you agree to sharing your name, address, and firstborn, and
No, LibreOffice should journal will do it for you. Xernal journal. Whatever. I used that for years, and I forgot about it. I'm going to go play with it again. It's particularly for a touchscreen. It's quite amazing, but even without that, it's great. One of the tricks I did is I used my phone and a stylus to save my signature to a graphical file.
Yeah, I did that. I did that maybe last year, and then I used this other software that I had, but it's not user friendly as far as just simple whatever. I got to send it and then receive it, and then I got to go through a bunch of steps.
Right, but my point is, what I would then do is under Zernal, I would add that graphical file to the bottom of the document where the signature goes,
right,
and then resave it as a PDF, and it would have that on it.
So do that from the journal or from LibreOffice?
No, well, either one should do that for you. But remember, first you've got to open the document and save it to your computer without the password.
Oh, okay.
All of them. The entire point behind the password is to get you at the document, not allow you to do anything with it. It gets you at it. You then save it, do what you want, re-lock it, and send it back.
Especially for your tax documents, you don't want anyone to intercept it along the way through the email.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's perfectly fine. I just was looking for something that's you know, on my desktop, and you know, that's if you go that far to get to the desktop, then everything else is all bets are off anyway.
You're right.
So if I am in Google Drive and I open the document, I don't see a save as?
No, I believe I said LibreOffice.
I'll open it in Libre.
So first,
I got to get it to my desktop without a password.
Right, so you download it.
Okay.
Then you double click on it, it will ask you for the password.
Okay.
Then you can open it, immediately save it back to your computer. Just save it. Don't give it another password.
Right.
Then you can import it into something like Zernal or LibreOffice or whatever you want and do your editing there and then save it again. And then with a password.
Right, okay.
And then you can send, the easiest thing is to use the same password.
Because...
Right.
Yeah, she already knows that one. And
exactly.
Give her a new password, then I got to send her the password. That's not, yeah.
You know, you don't want
to. In a different channel.
Right.
So you send it to them, you know, in a text message, or but you don't send both the file and the password on the same channel, like both in email.
Right. Yeah. No. If I use the same one, she's already got it. So
exactly.
That works.
There you go.
Windows question, which I hate.
But the other thing is, drive to their office and sign it by hand.
It's probably faster.
Well, less hassle.
What I did the first time was years ago was print it, sign it, scan it, destroy it, email it.
Yep.
But yeah, that was not the best way. I'm gonna try the way you're telling me, and I'm gonna see where I get with that. I've got only two programs that I use that require Windows. And I got a couple of people. One's an engineer that's got Windows 10. He's resisting upgrading. He's looking for a Linux way to work with these two programs. I'd be rid of Windows on a hard. I got a Intel Nook. It's a decent machine.
Yep.
But it's running Windows, which makes it stink.
Yeah. You can look into Wine, which is a way of running Windows programs inside of Linux. But finding a Linux native program is the best way to go.
So what are the two programs?
It's Fusion 360. And a piece of software called Discriminator, which is a free download. Now it's a free download. When I got it years ago, it was $75, which for doing CNC work was CNC editing, because it's all the G codes and M codes are color coded. It has a graphics that'll show you the toolpath. It's saved me a bunch of times when I'm working a previously run program. I can look at it and see that the toolpath goes off into the wild blue yonder, and I go, there's something wrong with that file. But I have not found an equivalent that gives me all of that in Linux.
Yeah, that sounds very specialized.
It looks like there is a Linux version of Autodesk's Fusion 360 from a company called Canonical Snapcraft.
Canonical is the people who put out Ubuntu,
mm-hmm.
and Snap is their replacement format for apt. The thing behind a Snap is what they've done is they say, okay, this program needs requirements that may interfere with what you've already got on your desktop,
mm-hmm.
so we're going to bundle everything into a single set of files. It runs in a virtual machine. All you have to do is download the Snap, and when you say run Discriminator, it starts up the virtual machine, loads everything, runs it. When you shut it down, it shuts it down. It's all magic. Half the stuff I run is Snaps now.
And snapcraft.io is where this Fusion 360 for Linux is posted. I'm posting a link to it.
Okay. That was the other thing I was going to ask you to do, and I can get to that. What's the major difference between a Snap package and a Debian package?
A Debian package installs right into the operating system, so there is the possibility, although it's much lower than it is under Windows. Remember we used to talk about DLL hell?
Right, yep. Been okay. There.
Same idea, much, much less likely under Linux, but what Snap does is eliminate that altogether.
Okay.
So by bundling everything, including all of the underlying requirements, it never touches the main operating system and therefore never screws up any other program.
Okay. So there's no possibility of crosstalk.
Right. Now, they are slightly slower to start. They may take 3/4 of a second instead of 1/2 to start up.
Okay.
But once they're running, there's no difference.
My Windows machine takes 3 days to start up, so 1/2 second. I've got a see if I can figure out. There's about 150 or more things running in a Windows when I do the task manager.
Yep.
I see a whole list. I don't know if I don't recognize half of them.
Well, most of them are underlying programs that Windows use. Same thing is true of Linux. If you run the task manager in Linux,
okay,
you get very much the same thing. There's a million programs running under the hood.
I have 3,528 threads running right now.
Yeah, exactly.
So I have
on my Unix BSD.
I have a full paid Avast package, and it is so annoying because it keeps butting into whatever I'm doing. All of a sudden, this pop up comes up, and Do you want to do this? And I go, no. And then 5 minutes later, you want to do that? No. But I'm not thrilled with all that. But I guess it's an essential.
Right.
I downloaded the journal package from the journal website.
Good. Well, hold on.
Okay.
First, we've got to move on. But
okay.
Before I do
all
that.
Right.
The first place you should look for any program is in your repository. So,
right.
You know, apt, sudo apt, sudo. I've always said sudo.
Mm-hmm.
Sudo
mm-hmm.
apt install Zernal +++, Zernal PP, rather than downloading it from the website. Because the version that's packaged with your operating system is tuned to your operating system.
Okay, great.
So either the snap or the apt should be your preference.
I did that, but I was right there with the when I was searching, I found it, the website, but it installed an icon that does nothing, and I can't get rid of it. I have two icons now that say external.
Okay, one of them, I'd have to research that, Fred, and we really have to move on.
Yeah,
always
yeah,
install
right,
things
thanks.
From your yeah. repositories.
That's what I usually try to do, and it took me a minute to find it, and I had the other one in my hand, and I said, let me just download it from here, and it didn't work.
Right. Okay.
All right. Well, thanks, Scott.
Thanks, Fred. Bye-bye. I just, we have to
somebody's
move on. I don't mean to be rude, but we got to move on. What, if you are running Linux, there is a set of packages that come with your machine. In Debian-based system, there that's the apt group, the something package, something, I don't remember what APT stands for, or the snaps, or I suppose you can run flat packs, but that's not as easy.
APT is often advanced persistent threat.
Thank you so much.
In the security field.
For that. Another county heard from, ladies and gentlemen. Speaking of another county, we've got Don from North Carolina. Where are you calling in North Carolina, Don?
From a small town of Farrington Village, about 8 miles south of Chapel Hill.
Ah, Chapel Hill, okay.
Right, down here for a bit of a winter break. Anyway, I have quite a simple question, I think. And that is concerning extended leave and whether or not it's a good idea to leave chargeable devices like portable phones, iPads, iPods, etc., on their chargers while you're gone for a couple, 2 or 3 months, or is it better to leave them off for fear of overcharging and simply let them run down naturally and charge them when you get back home?
Well...
For a couple of days, you might want to leave them charged. But
yeah.
Months, I would drain them down to about 80% and unplug them and turn them off.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't leave them on.
Just, yeah.
A battery that is drained to zero for several months is as bad as one that's left plug in for several
mm-hmm.
months. The problems are chemically... exactly the opposite, but they're both bad. So what you want to do is pick some middle range. I generally pick 40 to 50%.
Yeah, right, then, at least below 80%.
Right, yeah. right. And then I just turn it off, which is different from letting it drain to zero.
Because it'll still maintain a charge.
It'll keep that charge for months. So, again, if you're going to be gone for months, maybe 80% is where you want it. So there's still some charge when you get back. But you don't want to leave it plugged in, and you don't want to let it drain to zero.
Because you don't want something to overcharge, a short circuit, and cause a fire.
Right. And you don't want something that drains to zero, because that's bad for the battery too.
I guess I'm a little bit confused, particularly with portable phones, where you're connected to a landline, but by Wi-Fi or RF or whatever it is. There's no switch on that phone to turn it on or off. It simply
unplug the power.
Well, right, and a lot of those systems, there's nothing you can do. But for any system that you have a choice, drain it to about, you know, somewhere below 80% and turn it off.
Or if there's no power switch, just unplug the power cord.
Just unplug the power cord or take it out of the cradle.
Right, taking it out, that's what I generally do. But I'm wondering, again, for an extended leave, 2 or 3 months, is it better to leave, and specifically a portable phone, better to leave it in the cradle or not and let it run down by natural causes?
Is this just a regular landline?
Yeah, just a landline portable phone, yeah.
It's a landline portable phone.
Then you can just leave it in the cradle. I mean,
but I would unplug it so that it stops trying to charge it.
Yeah, just unplug it and don't worry about it.
Well, what's the difference between leaving it in the cradle and unplugging it, or taking it out of the cradle?
No difference. It's just
laying it on your desk and leaving the cradle plugged in.
Well, then no difference. The only difference is, if there's a problem in the network, it'll blow the cradle.
There's the whole vampire power thing. If you have a transformer plugged in and not using it, it's using electricity and generating heat.
Yeah, and even if it's not what happens, charged. All of a sudden you get a power surge.
Exactly.
You know,
it could
blow the charging unit. So that's why it's just better leave it in the cradle and unplug it.
Yeah, and especially during thunderstorm season.
Yeah,
with old CRT days, it was much more of an issue to unplug things during thunderstorms. Mm-hmm. But if you know you're going to be away for months, you don't know what storms are going to happen, and you don't want a nearby lightning strike to cause problems in your house.
Okay, so leaving it in the cradle, unplugged from the wall.
Sure.
Does the cradle drain itself? Does it drain any amount of power from the battery of the portable phone?
It has no effect if it's unplugged.
Okay, so there's a diode in it or whatever that prevents any discharging through
connection.
Well, the phone itself.
No, there's a difference between no effect and some sort of effect. So if you unplug the phone and if you unplug the cradle and leave the phone in the cradle, that is exactly like taking the phone out of the cradle and leaving it on the desk, except that you don't want to leave that charger plugged in for months.
Great. Okay. That makes sense. So it sounds like, though, not a real good situation either way. For an extended absence, the best would be to not keep the phone or any other device on charge continually.
Exactly right.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Don.
Most computers and smartphones have circuitry in them to prevent overcharging, but that circuitry can fail.
Well, it can fail, and then we've seen how many videos have we seen of phones that catch fire?
Tim?
Yeah.
They all had the circuit. They still caught fire.
Yep.
And if there's any kind of surge, like a lightning strike or whatever,
top of the hour, so we'll
it can run through your home and blow every device you've got. And again, if it's something like a phone with a battery in it, it can start a fire.
We had a customer that had a lightning strike. It took out the garage door opener, the stove, and the power strip all their computers were plugged into. The two PCs that were plugged in died, but the Mac was saved. So we always the Mac still worked. We always joked that the PCs gave their life to save the Mac.
It was nice
and
of them.
Absorbed the rest of the power before it could get into the Mac.
Right. If you have an uninterruptible power supply, that's a good thing. If you have just a power strip, make sure that it's the kind that will protect you from a lightning strike. Also, be aware that many of those only work once. And that once they have protected you, they stop protecting you.
It did its job, so get another one.
Now, some of them have a fuse switch. Some of them have a fuse. You can replace the fuse. Some of them have a breaker switch, a reset switch, that will reset and then protect you again. But it's up to you to change that fuse or reset that switch. So be careful and be aware of what's going on. All right. That music tells us that the first hour of this show is in the books. Unbelievable, but do not fret. There's an entire another hour of this show coming your way. An entire another hour of Dave Enright. An entire another hour of Steve Ray. An entire another hour of me, Nick Francesco. And, of course, an entire another hour of you. But you have to give us a call to get in the queue. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Take a little bio break, grab a beverage of choice, and we'll be back with a whole nother hour of sound bites right here on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites, right here, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And we have Tim from Greece, New York, on the line. What's up, Tim?
Okay. I have a 2018 Mac Mini, and both Apple and DuckDuckGo there did some upgrades, and now my Sappho scan is... It seems to be blocking me from getting to the internet. I've shut it off and restarted a couple of times. I shut the, I don't know if it's called a modem now that I have fiber optics and restarted. But yesterday afternoon I was on it and it just shut out. And now one of my Sappho icons has an X in it and it's not letting me access the internet.
Yeah, one of the things that Sophos Protection adds is a firewall blocker to block bad things from accessing the internet. Sounds like it's a little overzealous.
Yeah.
Did you just upgrade to the new Sequoia operating system by any chance?
Yeah, they did that last week or sometime over the last week. It did a couple of upgrades. I let it do.
So generally what you need to do is uninstall Sophos and reinstall it because of the new permission. So it's not just a matter of quitting it. You actually have to run the uninstaller and remove it.
I do that, and then it says it can't do that.
Should tell you why.
Okay, let me run it right now again. I got it ready to go. I go continue. The blue line's going back and forth there like Pong.
It should ask for your administrator password.
Yep, I'm going to that now. That's what I'm waiting for.
Interesting. He thinks it looks like Pong. I think it looks like a Cylon.
A Cylon. It's a blue Cylon, yeah.
And there's probably somebody out there who thinks it looks like Kit.
Because Cylons were stolen for Kit.
Yeah, they were.
Donald Belisario.
Where are we here?
And you're using...
Man, can we geek out for...
Yes. And you're using the remove Sophos icon that's in the Sophos folder,
yeah,
right?
Remove Sophos icon with the lock.
Yep.
And I'm typing in my password. And now I'm hitting installer help.
No, don't hit installer help. Hit install.
Well, it says install helper is what comes up.
Okay, a helper. Okay, yeah. So it's the helper that's going to uninstall the rest of it.
And the line's still going back and forth. I did an error on my password here. I gotta double check that now. Not double check it, but doing it one handed, I probably missed something.
Feel free to put the phone down while you type in your password. We can hum while you wait. Why am I humming Pinky in the Brain? Where did that come from?
Take over the world.
Okay. No, wait, come on.
So I'm also posting a link on how to manually uninstall Sophos. You have to do a couple of command lines and go into some hidden folders.
Okay. Let me just, for some reason...
You have
to
drat
these computers. They're so naughty and so complex. I could pinch them.
I could pinch them. Z, yeah. The Q83.
Where's these computers? They're so naughty and so complex. I could pinch them.
Where's the massive kaboom? It's supposed to be a massive kaboom.
Now it's not even taking my password for some reason.
Ah.
I don't.
Do you have to type your username too, or is that already filled in?
That's already, my name's already filled
okay.
in.
Okay.
And,
Is your
caps lock.
Caps lock on?
Yep.
No, I turned that off.
Maybe it needs to be on?
No, I got two caps I use and a couple of characters, but I'll try it one more time here, real slow.
I saw a neat one the other day where somebody said, no one can guess my passwords. It's eight black dots. That is my password.
Okay.
Which you can type using on a Windows computer using, I think it's the Alt key
yeah.
and the keypad.
On the Mac, it's option 8 with the asterisks because it's a filled-in asterisk.
Sure.
Yeah. So any luck?
I got to click it one more time here. Okay, there it goes. The removal failed. Software was not successfully removed.
And it doesn't say why.
Nope, just the yellow thing and says close.
All right. So you'll likely have to use the manual uninstall process.
All right. I'll go to your website then. It's Soundbites on my phone and see how to do that manually.
Yep.
Yes.
So
okay.
At new OSs have... more stringent security to stop bad stuff from getting in, and the side effect is it also stops frequently you from doing things you want because the computer can't tell if this is a bad program or a good program.
Yeah, usually when they do this, like I do, crash it or restart it, wait a day, and it straightens itself out in a day or two.
Yeah.
Yeah, but usually.
It may need an update for your new system version that it can't install because it's not compatible
yeah.
with the new system version.
Right. Okay, I'll look at your sound bites there and see how to do it manually. Thanks, guys.
Now, let me suggest when you do that,
yeah,
you read over all of the instructions before you start doing them.
Oh, you mean I'm not supposed to build it without reading the instructions?
Yeah,
no cowboy stuff today, Tim.
Okay. No problem.
All right.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Yep, thanks. In general, whenever we give you a page of instructions to look at, read through the whole page, make sure you understand it before you try to use it.
Yeah, don't skip a step you don't understand because then it won't work.
Then it won't work.
Yeah.
Call us back. Right, or don't just jump to the middle of the page and say, oh, that looks like it'll fix it. I used to do that all the time, and I still have the tendency to skim a page and look for
mm-hmm.
something I think is going to work. That's not how it works anymore. It hasn't worked that way ever, actually. So be aware that you really do have to understand and use all of the instructions before you move on. All right. Our next caller is Dave from Canandaigua, New York. What's up, Dave?
Well, I thought I'd... pitch in on one of your previous callers. I think it was a friend of his is involved in CAD and CAM and CNC.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that has to be the core of my business. My experience with the things you struggle with, trying to keep up with upgrades of the software, you know, operating systems and all that, the only way out of this ultimately is to set up virtual box. So let's assume you're going to start, you're going to load up Linux on a machine, set up virtual box, and then you can maintain all the CAD/CAM stuff, if it's Windows or whatever,
yep,
without having to, you know, do this, that, and the other thing. Now, setting up a virtual system, you know, that's some work and all, and I haven't figured it all out yet. But I've been at this problem for years, you mm-hmm. know, because I've always, my part of my job was to help customers get around these problems.
Right.
So the one thing is, now there was, what was it, the...
Fusion 360?
Yeah, okay. Now, if it's not actually an AutoCAD problem, I would say give it a try first. But there's a lot of things people say, oh, yeah, you can do this, do that. Autodesk is very, very resource hungry.
Oh, yeah.
And so if you're going to set up a virtual machine, you're going to need a lot of memory.
Yep.
And you got a big learning curve.
Yeah.
But that's, and there's other things, like Wine has never worked for anything for me in this area.
Yeah. So, well, like we said, there is a version of Fusion 360 for Linux, and that's certainly the best solution if that's where you're going.
Well, I thought he said it was made by somebody else, though.
I'll
look that up.
It may have been packaged by somebody else.
Maybe. Okay. Yeah, give it a try, because you can try that out for free.
Right.
But, you know, if you're in that business, you got to look at going to Linux and putting up virtual machines.
Mm-hmm.
I have CAD/CAM software that I don't want to, it's hideously expensive.
Yeah.
And I don't want to abandon it, because I already know it. There's always a big learning curve with CAD/CAM, CNC
right.
stuff. So you can keep using your stuff, just don't put it out on the internet or whatever.
Right.
And keep going.
Yep, that's how it works.
That's it.
So thanks, Dave. We appreciate that.
Yeah. And Fusion 360 is one of these sneaky programs. It's free for students and personal use. Or $700 a year.
Yeah.
For everybody else.
Yeah.
And that's a subscription. You used to be able to buy it outright, and it was several thousand dollars once. But then you need the new version in a couple of years, and it's several thousand dollars again.
Right. And there are alternatives like FreeCAD.
Yeah.
And Blender and a couple of others that do similar things. But now you're learning a new program, and nobody wants to do that. And VirtualBox is a great solution. What it lets you do is run Windows in a virtual box, a virtual computer inside your real computer. But as Dave said, you need a lot of RAM. So Autodesk takes 8 gig minimum itself. More is better. So you want like 32 gig of RAM so that you can have a 16 gig VirtualBox for Autodesk. And there are utilities that let you save and load stuff from your main Linux drive so that you can use them outside that, or send them to somebody, mail them, or whatever it is you're going to do. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Chuck from Penfield, New York. What's up, Chuck?
Hi, guys. Another tax question. TurboTax has gone to a no CD for desktop use.
Right.
And I've been using TurboTax since they sold it on floppy disks. But I always want a physical copy so that if I upgrade my system and need to install the software, or with taxes, if you need to file an amended return, you can reload the software and get yourself back up and going. If you need to change anything, you can save your work as a PDF, but in order to do anything, you have to have the TurboTax.
All right, so you're downloading it from the internet, right?
Right, and I want to save that to a CD or something.
Yeah.
So all right. What I would do.
A CD for $10, but that's over and above what you've already paid for the program itself.
Right. So but, burn it. You can burn it onto a CD yourself.
Well, that's my question.
Or what? Which is free. What I do, there's a number of ham software packages that I download and I want just in case something goes wrong. If you've got a Gmail account, you get 15 gigs of free storage.
Okay.
So what I do is download the version onto my desktop, and then I copy it on over to my Google Drive. That way, if I need it, like you said, oh, I've got to reinstall it, I can re-download it to my desktop, reinstall it, and I'm good until the next version comes out, and I would just replace the old version with the new one.
Well, I was my thoughts were okay. Once I download this stuff from the cloud, if you want to use that phrase, can I just a single executable that I can now put on my own CD or put on a jump drive or put on a backup file
and it should be in your backup drive anyway, because you're backing up your whole computer, right?
Right. Well, the question becomes, is that the executable to run the software, or is it simply an executable that goes out and gets the software and actually downloads and installs it?
Most of the time, it's the installer.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I just downloaded TurboTax, and it's 320 megs, so that's probably it's the installer itself.
Right.
But there are some times when the download is a stub, so you know it's only like 20K or 30K.
Right.
Yeah, it's a hook to go out to the web, grab it, and bring it down.
Yeah.
Right, right. Yeah, because I don't want to install something that if I'm trying to rebuild my systems and I'm not on the web yet, it goes out and tries to find something that it can't get there, and now you're hosed.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay. But from what you're saying, you can download it, burn it to a CD, stick it on a jump drive, put it somewhere for safekeeping, and then be able to reuse it. Okay.
Yeah, I do. Like I say, if you got a Google account, you've got, and you can get multiple Google accounts. You can have one for your personal stuff, open up another Google email address, and you got 15 more gigs, say, for your business stuff.
I more tend to want to save it on my premises.
Yeah, that's fine.
Not somewhere where, you know what I'm saying?
Well, you should always have one copy out on the web somewhere in case the worst happens to your physical home.
I should also have something here in case I can't get there.
Yep.
And that's what I'm looking for.
Well, you should. Both ways. We've always said it should be the 3-2-1 backup system. You want three backups in two separate places, one of which is online.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. All right. Real good. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks.
Bye.
The other thing, though, that Chuck breezed over is if you're setting up a new system, the first thing you should do is get online so that you can download updates and install them.
Yep.
Because otherwise you're running on bad stuff. So
even if you buy a brand new computer, who knows how long since it was made? And Microsoft updates everything every month. Apple updates as needed, and it's quite frequently every month or so. So,
Linux updates all the time.
So even if you buy a brand new computer, it's going to need updates right out of the box.
Right.
Although Apple's starting to do something sneaky with their phones. Because of the NFC, the near field communications that let you do tap to pay, the Apple stores have a box. I haven't given it to us yet. But the Apple stores have a box that will update the phone OS inside a sealed box.
Whoa!
Because that's one of the most annoyances we get. We buy a new phone for a customer. We have to update the OS ourselves before we can copy the customer's data over, and that takes another hour.
Right.
So the NFC is able to wake the phone up enough to install an OS from inside a sealed box, which is pretty cool. But then what else could it do?
Exactly.
That's probably why Apple hasn't given these boxes out to their dealer channel, because they want to keep it themselves.
That doesn't make me confident.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Kyle from Greece, New York. What's up, Kyle?
Yes, I used LastPass as a password manager.
Sure.
And they asked me if I wanted to use an authenticator, and I said yes. Now, what do we have to do to upgrade to a new phone?
Okay, so you've got an authenticator on your old phone.
Correct.
And you're buying a new phone.
Thinking about it, and I like to figure this out first.
Well, you hope that you printed a copy of that QR code when you set up the authenticator, because you need that same QR code again.
All right. I think I saved it.
Either save it as an email or print it out and put it somewhere safe.
All right, because it's been a while since I did it, so I wasn't sure. All right.
One of the things we started seeing, I just ran into this with Google earlier. I told Google I didn't have my authenticator with me, and it let me log in with my password.
Yeah.
So it will fall back. And if you say I don't have my password, it sends an email loop. So the authenticators are nice, but the bad guys can bypass that. So for the best security, you should not be able to bypass the authenticator.
Right.
But then you lock yourself out of your own stuff, and so companies aren't going to do that.
Right. All right, so I should be good to go. But when you back up the iPhone to your hard drive and then you get the new phone and plug it in, that probably won't do it.
Probably not. The app will come over, but I don't think so are you using the Microsoft Authenticator or the Google Authenticator or third-party one? Well, they're both third-party.
I'm using the LastPass Authenticator.
Okay, they have their own now.
LastPass, actually, yeah.
So theoretically, that stores everything in your LastPass account. So if you log back into LastPass, it should bring back all of your previous authenticators.
All right. Okay. Good. All right. Just wanted to make
but,
sure.
Yep,
I was
but
gonna
everyone
myself.
Keep a, if you ever set up authentication or pass keys is the new thing now, where you get a QR code to scan with your phone. Make sure you save that QR code when you set up the authenticator, so that you can get back into it on a different phone.
On the Google Authenticator, there is a transfer codes choice.
Yeah.
Where I can export my QR codes or import QR codes.
All right.
I haven't looked at the others yet.
Is there a way once you get into the authenticator just to turn it off and go or turn off two-factor?
You do that individually by product. So if let's say you've set it up in Gmail, you have to go into the Gmail setup and say turn off two-factor authentication. And it will yell at you, but it will let you do it.
I think you can turn off passkeys, but I don't think you can turn off two-factor anymore.
Gotcha.
Well, maybe not. I know you used to be able to. It would yell at you, but you could do it.
Yep.
All right. Well, I'll give it a shot. I appreciate you guys' time.
All right. Thanks, Kyle.
Thank you. Have a great weekend. Take care.
Yep. Yeah, it's a... more and more places are moving to authenticators. And basically an authenticator is an app on your phone. So you go to log into something and it says go to your phone and type in the code. And those codes change like every 6 or 8 or 10 seconds. So I've actually been at the point where I was in the middle of typing in a code and it changed.
Yeah, so if it's at 45 seconds or some of them will have like a pie filling in.
Right.
If it's too close to the end, wait for the new one.
Yeah, exactly. What that does is... the bad guys try to get your stuff, and they don't have your authenticator. So the numbers theoretically are unique to each individual.
Yeah, and it's safer than a text message. So a lot of places use text message as the second factor to send you that code you type in. But texting is not secure. It's wide open. Anyone could intercept it. They're probably not, but they could. And so an authenticator app goes through the internet and it's encrypted at both ends, so that it's much harder to break into your authenticator for that 60 seconds, that code is good for.
I got a half a dozen requests this week to change my password on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Except Instagram thinks I'm Audrey SK. I have no idea who Audrey SK is, but he, she, or they used my email address to set up their account, and now constantly LinkedIn. And I've sent things saying, I'm not, this is wrong. It's not me.
Yep.
I've tried logging in as Audrey SD. Okay.
And since it never completed the email loop, it never completed setting it up.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I now have a filter. Anything that starts with Audrey SK just goes to trash. I don't care anymore.
So authenticators and passkeys are much safer than passwords, because a password, the other end has to keep secret.
Right.
And then it checks when you type the password at your end. The other end is really, really bad at keeping secrets. There's billions, literally billions and billions of lost passwords. So with the authenticator and with passkeys, which now uses your phone authentication, so your face ID on your phone says, hey, is that Steve? And the phone says yes and tells the other end, yeah, that's Steve. But if it falls back to password or falls back to email, it's not as safe as it could be.
I've also gotten the just simply look on your phone and click yes, it's me.
Google does that.
Google does that.
Yeah.
Google,
yep.
There's also the one that, and I think it's also Google, shows you an icon.
Yep.
And then you go to your phone, it shows you three icons.
Mm-hmm. Which one is it?
And you pick
yep.
the one.
So I have so many devices that it often asks for the device I don't have with me.
Right.
And I can't – often there's no try a different device. I said, no, you got to try that. I did that once. I had set up a VM, an Android VM to run the Simpsons game. And it didn't work very well, so I deleted it. But I forgot to remove that Android from my Google account. So it kept asking me to go to that VM and type yes. No, I don't have that VM anymore.
Right. Yeah. I actually looked at my list of devices on Google the other day, and I had like 15 of them that I haven't had in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while, it's not a bad idea to clean that stuff out.
Well, Apple's keychain password manager that's been built into the Mac for 20 years used to count how many passwords you had.
Right.
And I got up to like 600 or 700, and then they stopped counting. They just renamed it Passwords, the app itself, Passwords. Apparently people can find passwords.
Right.
And it's back to count again. So on my laptop, I have 274 saved passwords.
Nice.
My personal computer is probably a lot more than that.
Yeah, I have NPass, and it does the same thing. I've currently got, I don't know. It's not showing me that.
Yeah, I just automatically, anything and everything, I put the password in there because even if I'm not going to use it for another couple of months, I don't care.
Yep. And it shows me my one-time passwords and shows me passwords that are too old or that are reused or whatever. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That is Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Sit back, relax, and listen to the underwriters, and we'll be right back.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415. While I read a little bit of Apple news. The iOS 18.3.2 update that Apple released last week appears to have broken iCloud Mail for some users. There were multiple complaints on various forums from users who say that the iCloud Mail was not able to push new iCloud emails to their phones, to their iPhones, after the iOS 18.3.2 update. Push email from other providers like Microsoft appeared to be working with no problem, so the issue was limited to iCloud Mail. Apple has been sued in federal court over what plaintiffs allege is false advertising of several Apple intelligence features. Filed Wednesday in U.S. District Court in San Jose. The suit seeks class action status and damages on behalf of those who purchased Apple intelligence-capable iPhones and other devices. Plaintiffs claim the device owners haven't received the Apple intelligence features they were promised. It's the email. It's the ads that all say, you know, get Apple intelligence. It's great. The suit is the latest headache for Apple as it struggles to bring those highly anticipated Apple intelligence capabilities to market. Bloomberg reported Thursday that Apple CEO Tim Cook, or if you prefer, Tim Apple, has lost confidence in the ability of AI head John, to execute on product development. It's Italian. I should be able to pronounce this. John Andrea. A report that came out Thursday said that Apple TV Plus streaming service is losing more than $1 billion with a B annually. The report also claimed that Apple TV Plus's subscribers count reached about 45 million in 2024. But don't forget that at the 2022 Oscars, where the Apple TV original Coda won Best Picture, that signaled the significance of Apple TV as a business. However, in 2024, Cook questions big-budget Apple TV films like the $200 million Argylle, which he said failed to generate impressive subscriber boosts or viewership. Now, all of this information is coming from anonymous sources, but it's clear that Apple is spending a huge amount of money on Apple TV, and it's that its viewership, compared to every other streaming service, is shockingly low. So what's your favorite Apple TV show? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415.
It's also cheaper than most of the other streaming services, even when they doubled their price from $5 a month to $10 a month.
Yes. Yes, that's not the point.
Yeah.
The point is, even though it's cheaper, people aren't buying it. That's not a plus.
What I hear a lot is, oh, I forgot that was on. So the Severance season 2 came. Oh, I forgot that was on. Silo season 2 came out. Oh, I forgot to watch season 1. So I went and watched both seasons.
Well, but the real problem is not what people are watching, but the number of subscribers.
Yep.
And part of that problem is that Apple was late to market.
Yep.
And so many people said, I've already got Netflix and Amazon Prime and this and that. I don't need another streaming service.
Mm-hmm. And they didn't
care how good the programs are.
And
I don't need
another streaming service. And Netflix just raised their prices.
Yeah. Netflix prices up again. And Apple TV didn't have a back catalog of old shows like all the other services. They're starting to now.
Right. But even so.
A little late.
Yeah.
Even so, the number of programs that are available is less.
Yep.
I don't know what the quality is like, although many people love them, and they did win the award for Coda. But people just don't jump as easily as they did back in the day.
Yeah.
Oh, there's something called Netflix? Let's get it.
Yeah, no, there's too many. There's so many other choices.
Right.
And people have subscription fatigue.
Right.
You know, do I watch this enough to pay for that subscription again?
Right.
So the intent, well, what you can do now, and it's easier than it used to be with cable TV, I can sign up for Netflix, watch all those shows I want, cancel it, and then sign up for Prime and watch all those shows I want, and then cancel that and sign up for the next one. And so when Disney Plus first came out with the Star Wars series, the story going around was millions of people canceled Disney Plus subscription because Star Wars was over.
Right, right, right.
So every streaming service is trying to come up with the next big show to make you stay subscribed or hoping you forget to unsubscribe because it's automatic deduction on your credit card.
And that's why shows like Reacher or Daredevil show an episode a week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Rather than put the whole season up, you binge it and you're done.
I think there's one more.
The penultimate episode of Reacher. So this is our team. This is our team.
Yeah.
And they're already starting to do season 4 for Reacher.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
He is a big hit for Prime.
Oh, huge hit. And Alan Ritchson is wonderful.
Yeah, he is very much a down-to-earth guy.
He's very much Reacher. Yes.
Yeah, I remember when he was a tall, scrawny kid playing Aquaman.
Exactly right.
On Smallville. That was his first big role.
He bulked way up for this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what? He's Reacher. They almost didn't cast him because Reacher's 6'5", and he's only 6'3". Yeah.
He had a nude scene last week.
He has a nude scene every week. My daughter said, oh, I'm watching Reacher, and the fan service is amazing.
Yeah. Well, that girl, the one detective there.
Yeah.
You know, he's coming down because he just, if you've seen
spoilers.
That one,
spoilers.
Yeah. Coming down the road, and she goes, oh,
Yeah. Yeah. Every week he manages to walk around.
Because he's just in boxer shorts going down because he just got out of the water swimming.
Yep. These people know who's watching. But it's...
And I know when they pause.
Yeah.
Remember that? Yeah. What was that?
So, rewind it.
TiVo would always publish their most paused show, and it was the what was it? The Janet Jackson wardrobe malfunction.
What? No.
Oh, that was... Well, before that was...
Roger Rabbit.
Yep. And people... Oh, that's neat. Yeah, I could see how people would pause on that. No one stopped to think, how do they know people paused? They watch everything you do.
Yep. They know everything you're doing. Yep. All of those services do.
Yep.
So
I saw somebody posted a meme. Netflix is the only company that cares about us. Because if you watch for too long, 3 or 4 hours,
oh, yeah.
a message comes up and says, are you still watching?
Yeah.
Partly because they don't have to pay the authors for that next stream if you're not really there. But, yeah, they care about me. Yes, yes, I am still watching. Thank you for caring.
Thank you for caring. But, yeah, there's – look, the streaming services in general are all fighting for your dollars. Back when it was just Netflix, they ruled the roost.
Mm-hmm.
And they could put up, honestly, any old crap, and people would watch it.
Yep.
What was the story? Best Buy, not Best Buy, the Blockbuster
yeah.
had the chance to buy Netflix for a few $100 million. Nah, people will still rent DVDs.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's newfangled. It's never going to go anywhere. And now there are so many choices. But like we said, people are already ensconced. Look. Amazon Plus, Amazon Prime, because of my wife's business.
Yep.
We order a lot of stuff for the business, and it's all free shipping. But that gives me Amazon Prime Video, unlimited video store, not video, picture storage. How do you say no to that? How do you at some point say, oh, I'm going to drop that for Apple TV? You're not. Even if we didn't have the business at this point, why
would
I drop it?
What's the incentive?
Right. You know, but Steve is right. You're going to watch Reacher on Amazon Plus. You're going to watch Severance on Apple TV. You're going to watch One Thing on Netflix. Is it worth all of that money to watch 1, 2, maybe 3 shows and that's it? It's not like cable TV where you sat down at 7 and you got up at 11:30.
Well, plus the regular shows on broadcast television.
Right.
There's never enough time to watch everything you want.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's why I love taping it with that little box that I got. And again, you can go I've given up watching regular TV.
Mm-hmm.
Tape it. Because then that way you can buzz right on through all the commercials.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for the box that will let me watch the show at 1.25 or 1.5 times speed. I listen to podcasts that way.
Right.
So I can get through all the podcasts I want to listen to at a time. I wish I could watch, YouTube. No, YouTube has a speed change.
Right.
But YouTube TV doesn't.
Right. YouTube, you can hit the space bar and go double speed.
Yep.
But, yes.
I usually have to – 1.5 is about as fast as I can still comprehend it.
Right. It depends on who's talking. There are a couple of people who talk very slowly so they can fill more time.
Listening to this show, I have a hard time at 1.5 with you. I have to back it off a little bit because you talk pretty fast.
Thank you. I think, yeah. I lived in New York for a lot of years, and that's how we talk in New York.
Yeah.
I have YouTube TV, which I love, and it records all kinds of stuff for me. I spend a lot of time. 14 hits goes through the 14. Yeah. Next 5 second increments.
Well, another
14 of them gets me through the commercials.
Another thing that folks can notice, and this is happening all over Rochester, a lot of the theaters are closing down because people would rather be at home sitting on their 55-inch TV or bigger. Their own sound system, and they can pause it and start it whenever they want.
Hit pause and get more food or bathroom.
Yeah,
or,
and they don't have to pay the high prices of the popcorn and soda and all that other stuff because that's where they make their money.
There's still nothing like seeing it in the theater, though, and I got to say that.
Some of them are,
but a lot of movies aren't staying in the theater as long as they used to.
Yeah.
Right. But that's the – is it snowing?
Yes.
Because now I'm angry. At any rate, I have to say, whenever I see an ad for a new, a trailer for a new movie, I first think cable, I'll wait for it to come on cable, or I'll go see it in the theater. And it better be doggone great for me to go see it in a theater these days. Mainly, I'm handicapped, I don't do a lot of walking, so I wait for things to come to cable because I'm sitting on my couch. But even so, the reality is that there's just a lesser incentive
to go out,
to get dressed, to go out and spend the gas, to spend the money for the ticket, to buy popcorn and soda.
Movies used to be a cheap date. Now $100 for
$100.
A yeah.
Family of four? Yeah, forget it.
I took my daughter to a movie for her birthday. I thought, I'm old, because it shocked me how much money I spent.
Well, and the the trailers. Before a movie, you used to see movie trailers for other movies. Now they're showing regular ads for crap.
Half hour.
I'm paying you to show me ads? No, thank you.
Yeah, I don't mind the trivia thing about movies. I'm at the movie theater.
Well, that's the thing, though. They say, all right, 3:15 start time. No, it really doesn't start until like 3:40 or 3:45 because of all the ads.
There was a theater that started advertising the actual movie start time, but no one was used to it. No one got used to it. No one believed. Yeah, so they kept coming, and the movie's been running for 20 minutes already.
Yep.
Well, yeah, because we waited for the 20 minutes of commercials. No, we advertised the time the movie starts, so they had to stop that because they were the only one doing it, and no one would believe them.
Yeah, we often, my daughter and I usually go to the theater. We show up, we sit down. We're the only people in the theater. And then 15 minutes later, people start coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it. I get it.
Because they're there. They know that it's not going to start on time.
And it's an empty theater and someone sits right next to you?
Yeah.
That's annoying.
Right. Nowadays, you pick them off that little screen. Move over!
Yeah.
Well, AMC, though, you can reserve your seat.
Yeah, a lot of them you can now. Yeah. So, yeah. But, yeah, there's and the reality is that sometimes they hit the streaming service so quickly that...
The second-run theaters still have it in the theater.
The second-run theaters still have it. So, if I'm, you know, again, in my case, I'm physically less capable than I used to be. So I'm less likely to go out, particularly when it's raining or snowing. But often enough, I'm willing to wait a month for it to hit a streaming service.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm fine
and
with
it's
that.
It's cheap for
and,
what
and it, sometimes
you get.
I intended to go to the theater to see that, but I didn't get around to it.
Right. It left too soon.
Well, the wife and I just, matter of fact, this past weekend, we watched Oppenheimer.
Yes.
Instead of going to the show and, you know, you don't know whether it's going to be good or not. And, I mean, that was a three-hour movie.
Did you watch Barbie, too, so you could do the whole Barbie
Heimer? Oh, hell no.
Right.
And it's just like Wicked. We started, we went to the theater to see Wicked. We wound up leaving because it was just so slow and drawn out.
It's now, like, the play, I've seen the play... Oh, 50 times.
I've seen it, yeah.
I used to know people in the cast, so I would get tickets, free tickets. That's the only way I was going to be able to see it in those days. But the play moves.
Yeah.
I mean, it moves. Oh, not Wicked. No, that was The Wiz. I beg your pardon. But I've seen Wicked, and the play moves. You know, it's good. I don't understand why they needed to draw it out so they could get two movies out of it, particularly when they end it where they ended it, which isn't the right place.
Yeah.
Well, and how many people didn't know it was two movies and the second one isn't even made yet?
Right.
What if are they making it? What if they decide not to make it?
Well, that's just it. If it didn't do well enough in the box office, there's not going to be a second half. It's a real problem that they've got now. What do you show?
Some by your name.
You know, back in the day,
Matt?
There were a lot of theaters in New York that I would frequent, and you know, there was one theater that always showed like Fred Astaire movies and other musicals, fairly well attended. There were the theaters that showed avant-garde stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Not fairly well attended. There were the theaters that showed Hong Kong kung fu movies. Packed!
Yep.
Packed! And then there were the places that showed Rocky Horror at midnight, and they were lines out the door.
So for the Wicked fans, part two is currently scheduled to be released November 21st of this year.
Oh, nice.
Currently.
All right. Currently. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Matt from Batavia, New York. What's up, Matt?
I just want to say I love my Chromebook. I've had it over 4 years. It's the best $99 I've ever invested. It's got over 420 battery life cycles, and it's still staying strong at 93%.
Nice. Nice.
And I just want to be on the radio today.
Well, now you were. Thank you, Matt.
Have a nice weekend, fellas.
You too, bye-bye. Matt. Bye-bye.
Yeah, it goes back to what we said earlier. Chromebooks are often a lot cheaper because all they do is the web. They right. don't need to have the extra processing power that most people don't use. Most people aren't doing first-person shooters or, yeah. or CAD work. So there are two callers that were doing CAD. They need a beefier computer.
Mm-hmm. Right. But
or
most
a
people
gamer.
Don't. And, yep. and in fact, now with Chromebooks, you can have a Linux subsystem. So if there is a Linux program you absolutely have to run, for example, but you want more RAM and you want a faster processor. So one of my Chromebooks, my newest one, I have a problem, but I admit it. My newest Chromebook, I can run Thunderbird for my mail system because it's beefy enough and fast enough that I can start up Thunderbird. It runs the Linux subsystem and everything still runs fine. But in my older Chromebook, it runs fine as long as all I'm doing is Chrome stuff. And you not only get, you know, the Chrome apps, but you can also run Android. Again, you want a little more RAM for that as well, but you can also run Android apps. So there are a lot of, you know, small Android. So, for example, NPass. They don't make a Chrome version, but they make an Android version.
Yeah.
And I can run that on my Chromebook. Just as easily as I can anything else. So,
like we've said though before, the Chromebook kind of has a built-in protective shell.
Yep.
That anything that tries to change it goes in wherever it hides it, the master file, and says, "Wait a minute, these two don't match." Nope, not going to let you in.
Even if something screws up your system, just reboot it; it'll be gone.
Yeah.
The other thing, what I noticed when I was teaching is many students had big, beefy machines in their dorm rooms and brought a Chromebook to class to take notes. You don't need anything more. It's nice and light, cheap.
What's wrong with a note paper and pen, Sol?
Yeah. Sit back in your lounge, in your rocking chair there,
who's
Grandpa.
Who's got clackety keys?
Oh, that's
well,
right.
That was the thing. Most of the Chromebooks didn't have clackety keys either.
Yep.
Well, that's the other thing, cursive. You know, they're doing away with learning cursive, which I think is totally wrong because, you know, if you've got a checkbook and you've got to sign checks.
They don't use checkbooks anymore.
Some places still require it. And
my son bought his car. It's like he didn't know how to sign his name.
Yeah.
Because he never signs anything.
Right.
Well, I've seen – when I was driving for the other company I was driving for, we'd go in and I'd see at the schools to go to pick up the kids, a lot of parents, they'd have the kids sign it because they didn't know how to write out and fill out the name or, you know, sign their name in cursive. And a lot of these kids, oh, I know cursive.
Yep.
And they got they were very proud that they did.
Yep.
So the joke about keeping kids out of your car, stick shift, and all the gauges are in cursive.
You're right. Well, I just saw a post. I didn't bother to read it. The very few cars that are left in 2024 that are stick.
I miss my stick shift.
I got my next door neighbor. I think this just says more about how old I am. Came over to my house, knocked on my door one time. Brand new neighbor, hadn't been there a week. He said, "Can you drive a stick?" "Yeah, why?" "My nephew or whoever it was left his car in the driveway and it's blocking." Yeah, I can pull it out of the driveway for you. So I pulled it out. He pulled his car out. I pulled it back in. And I went back in my house and I thought, that was not. Wait a minute. Yeah. What made him think I knew how to drive a stick?
You're old.
Oh, I'm old.
Yeah.
Well, most of the cars that still have stick, I'm going through a Motor Trend article here.
Volkswagen use OVWs.
They're higher end driving cars.
Right.
For, you know, you drive
right.
a lot, long mm-hmm. distances.
Well, I knew a guy who said, I'm only ever going to buy stick because automatic transmissions don't shift at the right time.
Mm-hmm. Enthusiast drivers. want manual transmissions.
Yeah, well, my very first car was a 57 Ford with three on the tree.
See, I bought a 68 Bel Air with three on the tree.
And a lot of kids wouldn't know today. You know, like, if we wanted high beams, there was a button on the floorboard.
On the floor.
Yeah, you had to dip. And then we used to have the side windows, the wings, to open it up to get a breeze to go
through.
Those
were the best.
I see that on the you're this old
right.
quizzes, you know, the high beam button on the floor. Nowadays, it's going to be the key lock on the ignition because they're all push button now.
I got to tell you a quick story. I went to buy this car, and I really liked it, but it was stick, and I didn't know how to drive stick, the 68 Bel Air. And I didn't know how to drive stick. But my father could drive anything with a wheel. So I said, okay. And the guy says, oh, it's way in the back, and the battery's dead, and blah, blah, blah. We'll pull it out. We'll put a new battery in it. We'll get it set up. Just wait. I said, okay, Dad, you're going to drive this because I can't drive stick. So you're going to tell me if this is a good car. 2.5 hours later, they finally get this car out. They got a battery on it. It's all charged up. We're ready to go. My father is nowhere to be found. I mean, nowhere to be found.
Somebody else had to get it there?
So I had to either tell the guy, put it back, or I was going to drive it. So I got behind the wheel. And the first thing I did, of course, was stall it. The guy starts making excuses. Oh, no, we'll fix that. We'll make sure everything is fine. And then I was able to drive it at least a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And get going. So I loved that car, that 68 Bel Air.
They used to have the manual chokes on it. I had manual choke on mine, and my dad used to get so ticked because I was very meticulous about my car. I kept it up, and even the dead of winter, I can remember one time, yelled down to me, Dave, I need you to come over and jump my car. His was dead. I go out there, and that Ford, I could sit there, hit the gas twice, pump the gas twice, pull the choke out just a little bit, bam, started right up.
Yep.
Every time.
Yep. Those were the days.
Those were the days.
Stop. All right. Sure, now we're going to get dinged for that on YouTube. all right, that music tells us we are done for another week. Great questions this week. I want to thank everybody who called in. They were great questions, a lot of questions. We very much like them. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. You are listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe, and that's Soundbites. Listen, prep yourself because next week starts our pledge drive, and we need your help. We need your help. So save those shekels. We'll be doing that next week. So you've got a week to prep that up for yourself, and we will see you next week on the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. Member supported Jazz 90.1. Be good to one another, will you?